Welcome back. I'm Alisa, and today I'm going at it solo. This is episode 37, and in this episode, we're going to be covering the death of Kanika Jenkins, which occurred on September 9th, 2017 at the Crowne Plaza O'Hare Hotel in Rosemont, which is a village in Cook County, Illinois. After her death, although her death has officially been ruled an accident, those close to Kanika think that there were definitely other factors at play that kind of led to her death. And they don't necessarily think that, they think that it was preventable. So Kanika Jenkins was born on May 27th, 1998 in Chicago, Illinois, to her mother, Teresa Martin. I couldn't find information regarding her father or his name or anything like that. So the only parent information I could find was about her mom named Teresa. And then Kanika had one older sister named Lenore Harris, who she was very close to. At the time of her death, Kanika was working two jobs and she had plans to attend nursing school, which I, you know, from everything that I learned about her, I think she definitely would have ended up doing that had she not died so young. Also during this time, Kanika's mother had been diagnosed with breast cancer and she had recently undergone surgery to remove the cancer. And Kanika's mom said that because of this, everything that she had been going through, Kanika liked to stay very close to home and she always had her phone on her, which is why what happened the night that she passed away is so odd, because she, you know, was away from home. It was, her mom said it was one of the rare nights that Kanika actually went out and did anything because she liked to stay so close to her mom. And according to her uncle, whose name is Jonathan Jackson, he said Kanika was just an angel. She was such a good daughter, such a good sister. She was just a very, very good person. And despite having such a loving family that she was so close to, the environment that Kanika had grown up in was, it was really rough. So she grew up in a neighborhood on the west side of Chicago, Illinois. And according to all reports, it was full of a lot of crime, drugs, a lot of violence. So, you know, despite all of that, Kanika had set these really clear goals for her future. And she seemed very determined to get out of that rough neighborhood that she had grown up in. And that's why she was working the two jobs and had plans to go to nursing school. And Kanika was a very smart girl and she was very determined. And I, in my opinion, she had a very good future mapped out for herself. And I think that she definitely would have accomplished every goal that she had set for herself. As I had mentioned, Kanika had grown up in the rough west side of Chicago. So one way that her and her friends kind of got out of that environment and had a little bit of fun was to have hotel parties. And they would have these hotel parties in nicer areas of Chicago. So the hotel parties were, like I said, a good way and a very popular way for kids in her neighborhood to kind of get together, party. And, you know, they said that there wasn't really a lot to do outside of that if they were trying to, you know, avoid all of the gang violence and the drugs and crime and all of that. So this was kind of what they did. So on September 8th, 2017, Kanika and a large group of about 30 friends had gathered at the Crowne Plaza Hotel in Rosemont, which was, like I said, a nicer area of Chicago. And they were there to celebrate their friend Irene's birthday. So after leaving the house in her mom's car with three of her friends at 11:30 p.m. on September 8th, 2017, Kanika and her friends made a stop on their way to the hotel party to get a Bluetooth speaker, a bottle of Hennessy, some energy drinks, and some marijuana. So Kanika, after picking up those items, Kanika arrived at the hotel with that group of three friends at 1:13 a.m. So I don't know if it really takes that long to get all of those items, because keep in mind they left the house at 11:30 and then they arrived at 1:13. So the time gap there is a little big. Not that that is really relevant, but so after arriving at 1:13 a.m., they headed to the ninth floor, which was where the hotel room that they were partying in was located. And all of that is shown on hotel surveillance footage. And I will say that as they're walking in, everybody looks, you know, from outward appearances, they look like they have their faculties. They're all sober. They hadn't already been drinking. And you'll kind of understand why I'm mentioning that now. Like, no one was stumbling. No one was looking like they were intoxicated. And the last known audio that we have of Kanika Jenkins before she had disappeared for that night came from, it was a live stream on Facebook that the birthday girl Irene had done. And the live stream was taken at 1:36 a.m. So that is very shortly after Kanika and her friends had arrived to the hotel party. And in that audio, you can hear her saying, I don't know who she's talking to, but she said, girl, I'm not drunk. And she sounds kind of like irritated. And in my opinion, she sounded sober. It wasn't a lot of talking, but from, you know, what I heard, she sounded like she was not drunk. But by 3 a.m., her and her friends, they said they were ready to leave the party. So Kanika did realize that she had forgotten her cell phone inside the hotel room. So her other friends said that they went back into the room to look for it while Kanika stayed in the hallway by herself. And according to the friends, they said it took them about like 15 minutes to locate Kanika's phone and get back out into the hallway. By the time they reached that hallway, they said that Kanika was gone. They didn't know where she was. She was nowhere to be found. Keep in mind, she now does not have a cell phone with her. So between 3:25 a.m. and 3:32 a.m., there is surveillance footage from inside the hotel of Kanika, and she can be seen staggering all over the place. And she's wandering around the hotel by herself on the lower levels of the hotel, and she appears to be like using the wall of the hallway to kind of keep herself upright. And at one point, she actually runs into a railing and then kind of like grabs it and like pulls herself up again. It's very clear in that surveillance footage that Kanika is inebriated. She is totally intoxicated. I don't know if it's alcohol or, you know, a combination of things, but, and we'll find that out later, but she is totally wasted. And so after wandering around, Kanika is then seen entering an unused kitchen that was located in the basement of the hotel. And she's, again, she's stumbling around the kitchen, but honestly, like this surveillance footage, it looks like she's, you know, walking, kind of walking with purpose. And I know that sounds weird to say because she probably had never been there before. You know, and I don't know why she was down there, but again, she, you know, kind of looked like she was just walking with some destination in mind. And after going around a corner in the kitchen, Kanika is then never seen alive again. So around 3:45 a.m., Kanika's friends are then seen wandering the hotel looking for her. And after doing so for about like 15 minutes, they're then seen using the phone at the hotel front desk. And they were using that phone to call Teresa, Kanika's mom. And that was around 4 a.m. So when the girls called Teresa, they were basically checking in with her to see if Kanika had made it home. And of course, Teresa said, no, you know, she's not home. And then they informed Teresa that, okay, like we don't know where Kanika is, basically. And she doesn't have her cell phone. So, you know, not a good situation. And something to note is the fact that the group of her friends that she arrived with, on the surveillance footage while they're looking for Kanika and like calling her mom, they look totally sober. Like they're not stumbling at all. They are walking the same way they were walking when they came in, unlike Kanika. So that was just kind of something interesting that I wanted to note. So like I said, Kanika's friends had then notified Teresa, and Kanika's mother then after like speaking with Teresa, the friends drove Teresa's car because remember Kanika had borrowed her mom's car to come to the party. So her friends had driven Kanika's mom's car back to her house and they arrived around like 5 a.m. And at that time, the girls kind of filled in Kanika's mom on like the details of the night. I'm sure they left some stuff out, you know, not wanting to get Kanika in trouble. So I don't exactly know how much detail they gave her, but basically they told her, like, we can't find Kanika. So at 7:15 on that same day, so this is now September 9th, Kanika's mom, Teresa, made a phone call to Rosemont Police Department from the parking lot of the Crown Plaza Hotel. And she was calling to inform them that her daughter was missing. She hadn't been able to locate her or reach her because she didn't have her cell phone. And apparently Teresa, along with other family members, had actually been at the hotel looking for answers regarding the location of Kanika. And after running into a lot of roadblocks with hotel staff, that's when she decided the best move to make would be to call the police. So that's why she was calling from the hotel parking lot. She had been looking for Kanika and trying to get information and was not able to. So that's why she called the police at around 7:15 a.m. So Teresa was also told by hotel staff that she could not view their surveillance footage from the time that Kanika went missing until a missing persons report was filed with police. So that is another reason why she had called and attempted to make that police report at 7:15 a.m. I did listen to part of the call, and it was pretty frustrating. I mean, during the call, the dispatcher basically the dispatcher recommends that Teresa go home, relax, and wait a couple more hours to see if Kanika shows up. So despite Teresa expressing her concern for her daughter's well-being, and she actually let the dispatcher know that her daughter had been drinking and did not have her cell phone on her. And the dispatcher did not have any sense of urgency to file a missing persons report or to begin any sort of search for Kanika at that time. So this to me is where things started to go wrong with this case. The lack of action taken by the Rosemont police in the early stages of the case is where the issues come up. I also don't understand why the hotel staff didn't let Kanika's family view the surveillance footage. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that there was underage drinking going on and they didn't want to, you know, get in trouble because they hadn't shut that party down. They kind of let a bunch of, you know, 30 plus teenagers party in a hotel room. There's underage drinking, you know, I think there was marijuana smoking. So it's like the hotel kind of turned a blind eye. So I don't know if that had something to do with it, why they didn't want to share that footage with her. But after making the initial call to police and being told to wait a while longer, Kanika's older sister, Lenore Harris, made an official missing persons report with the Rosemont police at 1:16 p.m. So on that same day. This is also when police began searching the hotel for Kanika. And I'm going to use the term searching very loosely here, because if they had really done an extensive search, then they would have found her. So, you know, take that for what it is. That's just my opinion. By 8:30 p.m. that night, officers are dispatched to the Crown Plaza Hotel again. And this time it's in regards to a family member of Kanika's going around the hotel and knocking on doors. And they were looking for answers, looking for Kanika, because, again, she's still missing. And so when the officers respond to that call, they check the hotel room that the party took place in on the 9th floor. They also requested to view surveillance footage from the early morning hours that Kanika went missing. Finally, I don't know why they didn't do this from the beginning. And after viewing the footage, the officers leave the hotel and ask the staff to contact them if they have any new information in the case. So again, this is where, you know, I think the police department messed up. This is also like, you know, I don't, when the ball was dropped, basically another ball was dropped. When they finally did look at the footage, they didn't look at it all the way and they missed the footage of Kanika stumbling into the basement kitchen. So after the officers left, the staff at the Crown Plaza Hotel continued to review footage from the early morning hours of September 9th. Four more hours would go by before Kanika is finally located in the basement kitchen inside a freezer by an employee of Crown Hotel at 12:23 a.m. on September 10th, 2017. So the hotel employee walked through the same kitchen that Kanika had walked through, went to the corner of the kitchen to where the freezer is located, which just so happened to be out of view of the camera. And he calls for a police officer to come over, and it is inside a cooler inside the freezer where Kanika's body is found. So in my opinion, if police would have watched all of that footage right when her mom expressed concern, they maybe could have found her. They definitely could have found her earlier because she basically led them right to where she was. You know, she was stumbling through that kitchen and then went out of view and was never seen again. So to me, that seems like it would have led them right to her. But again, just my opinion. At 5:07 a.m., Teresa and Kanika's sister Lenore had to confirm the identity of Kanika Jenkins. It is also at this time that officers escort the two over to the freezer where Kanika was found deceased. So when Kanika was found inside the freezer, she was kind of lying on her side with her head kind of crammed into the corner of the freezer at the front of it. And her arms were kind of underneath her body. Her right shoe was off of her foot and she had a small abrasion to the exposed right foot. Other than that, she did not have any other identifiable marks or abrasions to her body. It almost looked like she had been trying to like get out of the freezer and lay down to sleep when she couldn't open the door. That's just kind of what it looked like to me. If you want, it's very easy to find pictures of this. I know that's not for everybody, but I definitely wanted to look at it just for research purposes so that I could kind of get a better picture of, you know, what the crime scene looked like, I guess, if we're calling it a crime scene. So according to the autopsy report, Kanika's cause of death was listed as hypothermia due to cold exposure in a walk-in freezer with ethanol and topiramate intoxication as significant contributory conditions, and the manner of death was listed as an accident. So sorry, I stumbled over that a little bit. But Kanika's blood alcohol level was listed as 0.112, which is high. And the topiramate that was noted in her autopsy is something, I looked it up, and it's used to treat epilepsy and migraines. And when combined with alcohol, it's said that the medication can cause drowsiness, impaired memory and concentration, poor coordination, confusion and impaired judgment. So the combination of alcohol and that topiramate along with the cold exposure can actually cause hypothermia and death to happen faster. The autopsy report didn't say how much faster, and unfortunately the temperature of the freezer wasn't logged until 2 hours after Kanika was found, and the freezer door had been left open for an entire 2 hours. So after that 2 hours of the door being left open, the temperature inside the freezer was noted as being 34 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, in the autopsy report, it said that the freezer was capable of going as low as 8 degrees Fahrenheit. But unfortunately, because the door was left open for so long, we don't really know what the temperature was at the time that she had basically frozen to death. There was also a lot of surveillance footage released in regards to this case. So it clearly shows Kanika stumbling into the kitchen and out of view, which is where the freezer was located, like I said. So there was no one that had entered the area behind her, and no one left the area after she had disappeared out of view until, you know, that search for Kanika began, the like third search or whatever it was, and the employee had found her. That's not to say that someone couldn't have already been in the area and where, you know, and she stumbled upon something that she, you know, maybe wasn't supposed to, or someone was back there. I don't know if there's another way to get in and out of that kitchen. But there was nobody caught on surveillance. So just throwing that out there. And this case kind of like blows my mind because the things that kind of came out in terms of like the public and on the internet, their theories are super outlandish to me. This is a case where the internet really like took the ball and ran with it in weird directions. So I did want to cover some of the most popular internet theories, I guess. And a lot of them surrounded the mention of $200 in Irene's Facebook live stream video. So a lot of them are going to come back to that $200. So here are some of the theories. So in Irene's live stream video, you can hear something about $200 being mentioned. And the internet theories regarding this $200, like I said, are pretty out there. And quite frankly, in my mind, ridiculous. Some of them are that the $200 was the amount that her friends wanted to pay for her to be killed. I don't know why they would want to kill her or why $200, like that just doesn't make sense. Another theory is that $200 is the amount that her friends were going to be paid for her organs and that she was placed in the freezer to preserve her organs to later be harvested. Again, absolutely insane. And another outlandish internet theory is that the $200 was hush money for a gang rape that went wrong. So, and then there's also another thing that was going around the internet that said that they could hear Kanika saying, "Help me," in the live stream video, and that her friends had set her up to be killed by people at the party. So that none of those sound like plausible to me. And Irene's the birthday girl that did the live stream. She did an interview with a man named Zach Stoner, who was a very popular YouTuber who chronicled Black culture in Chicago. He has since been murdered himself. But during this interview, he had asked Irene a series of questions pertaining to the night that Kanika died. And in the interview with Zach Stoner of Zach TV One, Irene also addressed the $200 allegations. And in my opinion, it totally makes sense. So she said that she did, in fact, talk about the $200, but that it was in relation to a lost parking ticket. So the fine for losing a parking ticket in the parking garage of the hotel was a $200 fine. So, and that was confirmed. I saw pictures of the sign for the parking lot at the hotel. And that's completely, in my opinion, reasonable and believable. In relation to that $200, which is pretty much what all of the internet theories kind of centered around. So some other important information that came up during that interview with Zach Stoner was that Irene stated that she said that anytime Kanika would always, like, as soon as the alcohol started hitting her, she would always say, like, I'm not drunk. You know, so she was like, you know, that was kind of something she said when she was, you know, feeling a little tipsy or starting to feel the alcohol. And it's actually what she said in the audio. You can hear her in the background of Irene's live stream. She also mentioned that the only other time she had seen Kanika as intoxicated as she was the night of her birthday was on Kanika's birthday. So she said it was not typical for Kanika to get that wasted. Irene also stated that Kanika did not like to take pills. She said she didn't like the way they made her feel, and she didn't take them. So that to me is really strange because Kanika was found to have, you know, a blood alcohol level of 0.112, which is absolutely insanely high. And she also had traces of that topiramate in her system. So according to friends and family, Kanika did not suffer from epilepsy and she did not suffer from migraines. She was not prescribed that medication. So it's like, where, and then according to Irene, she didn't take pills. So how did that get into her system? You know, there was also a video that had surfaced of a guy that worked at the Crown Plaza Hotel. And it's taken, I don't know who it's taken by, but it's a female and she's like recording the conversation. I don't think he's aware of it because she just shows his shoes the whole time. But in the video, he says that her friends are the ones that set her up to get that drunk. They slipped something into her drink, took her cell phone and left her in the hallway, and they wanted to sell her on Backpage or something. I don't know how truthful that is. It seems, again, out there. But I just wanted to include it kind of with the internet theories and all of that. Some other issues that came up surrounding this case and why it received so much coverage and internet sleuthing interest is due to the lack of action taken by the police in the beginning hours of Kanika going missing. So many people speculate that it had something to do with the fact that Kanika was Black and came from a rough part of Chicago. And, you know, she was, keep in mind, she was partying at a hotel in a nicer area of Rosemont. So, you know, they're saying like they didn't take it seriously from the beginning because of those reasons. And had they filed the missing persons report earlier or performed a more thorough search of the hotel from the beginning, they may have been able to save Kanika from dying of hypothermia. So I think that they definitely should have began a thorough search of the entire hotel from the beginning, especially because they knew that Kanika was intoxicated. They could have seen where she went on their surveillance footage so quickly and easily had they looked. And if they had done that, then they could have found her so much sooner. You know, the breadcrumbs were there if they just looked for them. There's also a lot of speculation that police or the hotel or both had edited their surveillance footage to cover up what really happened to Kanika. However, I do not think that this is the case here. This is just my own personal opinion. I honestly think that Kanika was extremely intoxicated. She wandered into the freezer and got stuck inside and couldn't get out. There was information provided that stated that there was some sort of, like, inside of those freezers, there's usually some sort of release button that you can access from the inside of the freezer. But like, nobody would know how to do that. Like, Kanika wouldn't have known how to do that. And the case reminds me, okay, so we haven't covered this case, but I'm sure a lot of people that are into true crime have heard of it. But it's the Alyssa Lamb case, or Elisa Lamb case. And it reminds me so much of that case. The similarities are that there were a lot of internet sleuths that had so many of these wild theories regarding her being drugged and killed, and hotel staff and police covering it up. And, you know, at the end of the day, it turned out that the death of Elisa Lamb was just a tragic accident due to her mental illness that she was not managing at the time. So, you know, the similarities are there, in my opinion. I think they're very similar. I think, you know, a lot of people want there to be something more there, but I don't think that there is. I think that Kanika, unfortunately, drank too much. I don't know if that pill was slipped into her drink. I don't know if she willingly took it. But either way, she was very intoxicated, left on her own with no cell phone. And I think she stumbled into the freezer. I don't know why she would go in there. I don't know, you know, what, like, it just doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. But I don't think that I don't think foul play was involved in this case, this particular case. But a year after Kanika's death, her mom, Teresa, filed a $50 million lawsuit against the Crown Plaza Hotel, the security of the hotel, a restaurant inside the hotel. So among the reasons for that lawsuit included the fact that the security employees had not only not been watching surveillance footage in real time, but they hadn't immediately reviewed it once they were informed of Kanika's disappearance. I totally agree with that. I mean, I don't know how many hotel rooms have a security guard sitting there, like, watching footage in real time, but I think if they had, obviously, and if someone was paying attention, they would have seen her and been able to help her before she had, you know, stumbled into the freezer. But even if they didn't have somebody watching in real time, if they would have reviewed the footage right when her friends came to them and said, like, our friend is missing and she doesn't have her phone and she's wasted, they could have found her so fast because she led them to her basically in the surveillance footage. So Kanika had reportedly been wandering around the hotel for about an hour and no one helped her. They also stated the hotel employees had seen Kanika stumbling around the hotel and had not intervened to provide her with assistance. You know, they didn't say like, hey, do you need us to call somebody? They just kind of like let her stumble around. Also, the lawsuit states that the kitchen was not in use and should not have been accessible to hotel guests, including leaving the freezer on and unlocked. So I totally agree with that as well. I think hotel staff should have intervened. I think that's kind of, you know, I don't know. I think if you're a business, especially like, and you see a young girl by herself that intoxicated, it's your duty to help her. If it's out in public, even if you don't know the person, I think it's also, you know, you should look out for people. You should help people in those situations when they clearly cannot help themselves. At least offer it. At least call somebody. If they're unwilling to let you help them, call the police. It's better to be arrested for drunk in public and be in a drunk tank than to have something happen and have them die, or have somebody take advantage of the fact that they're that intoxicated. So I totally agree with that. I also think that the kitchen should not have been accessible to anybody except for hotel staff. And I don't understand why that freezer was on and why it was on and unlocked. Like, I totally agree with everything in their lawsuit. They also, the security guards and the hotel did not stop the party from happening. They knew that the party was going on. They knew it was underage drinking. They turned the other eye, didn't intervene, didn't do anything about it. Kind of, you know, sent them on the ninth floor and let them have fun. And if they had stopped the party, then maybe this wouldn't have happened. Who knows? However, you know, long story short, I do think this was a tragic accident. It's still very odd to me. I don't know. It's like, I tried to think of like the reasoning behind why she would go in the freezer. Like, I don't know. Maybe she was like drunk, hungry, wanted to find food. That's kind of the only thing I could really think of. And maybe she like got into the freezer and it locks behind you. And then she was like, oh crap, can't get out. Don't have my phone. You know, maybe, I don't know. And then I know it's common for people that are going through hypothermia, the later stages, to start feeling hot and take their clothes off. So maybe that's why she took her shoe off. I have no idea. But I do, at the end of the day, I think this is a tragic accident. I do think that it was preventable had people acted sooner and in a more appropriate, you know, way. But that will conclude this episode. Justine should be with me for our next episode. But until then, you guys can email us any cases you want us to cover. And in fact, we did have a recommendation that we are going to, we had a case recommendation from a listener, and I think we're going to be covering that in our next episode. So kind of stay tuned for that. But you can email us any cases or any opinions. We love hearing from you guys because, you know, it's like so exciting when a listener writes into us. But you can do so at murdersisterspod@gmail.com. So that's murdersisterspod@gmail.com. Thank you.